coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Nathan Zagura and Dino, Dave DiNatale, yes, here in the Dog Bowl, and Berea, Matt Wilhelm, on a Disney cruise with his kids for Christmas. So that certainly will be a lot of fun. We hope he has a great time with his family. But Dino, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. I'm in the Dog Bowl. This is fantastic.
And off the board and in the bowl, Dino.
Yes.
Did you catch any of the Monday night game last night?
Little bit of it, yeah. Little bit. You know what I came away from it? You can have Rob Ryan or not Rob Ryan with the Saints defense. It's not good.
Not good, no. But they made an interesting game. At one point, it was 28-3, and it ended up being a 35-27 finish. And for me, yesterday, as I was in the middle of 17 hours of sleep, apparently the Seattle trip wiped me out. I had a fever. I was in bed from 5 yesterday till 10 a.m. today, literally, which I don't know if I've ever done that in my entire life. But I was able to kind of awaken from my slumber and fever-induced coma and watch a little bit of this game. And I came away thinking from it, how in the world are the Lions 5-9? Their offense is so good. Stafford played brilliantly, 22-25 yesterday. We've got three running backs who are all good at different things. Amir Abdullah, explosive, 9 carries, 77 yards. You got the power guy in Joik Bell. You got Theo Riddick, who can catch the ball and break people's ankles. Then you've got the tight end, Eric Ebron, former first-round pick. Golden Tate had 2 touchdowns. And they got nothing from Calvin Johnson. First time in his career, back-to-back games with 1 catch.
But is that the problem? You mentioned the three running backs. Is that the problem? Because, as you guys like to say, you don't have the bell cow. You don't have the continuity. Is that the problem?
I don't know if it is or not. I mean, I think for the most part for them this year, it's got to be on the defensive side of the ball. It's been the problem. And Stafford is prone to interceptions at key times. But you just look at the talent on that team, and you at least feel like they've got a serious core to build around. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I don't know, you know, that's what I think everybody's struggling with the Browns. Like, what is it that we are building around going forward despite all the opportunities the Browns have had to acquire talent?
Yeah, last thought on the Lions, I guess. You know, they've already started forward thinking. They are going to have Ernie Accorsi help pick them, the former Browns GM, the former GM of the New York Giants, pick them a new general manager, somebody to kind of lead from the top down. Possibly bring in a new head coach if that's what the GM desires to do and replace Jim Caldwell. And, you know, the Lions are moving forward. They've got a quarterback, although if they want to trade Matt Stafford,
I'll take him.
I'll listen.
I would take him.
I would take him too. So, you know, and these are questions that are facing the Browns in this building right now as they wrap up these final two games and, you know, start to think about, you know, where they want to go in the future.
How about Willie Snead, 10 catches in the game for the Saints, 10 for 76. But it's funny, when he was here, I don't think Willie Snead would have been effective with the Browns. I really don't. And I remember writing a report talking about Willie Snead, and I said, Willie Snead would be really good in New England, New Orleans, Green Bay, where he can work kind of out of the slot with a quarterback who values the precision of his routes. He doesn't need to be explosive, just can be solid, and that's what he was. 10 catches that went for 76 yards. That's almost like a running back. Amir Abdullah had 9 carries for 77 yards. So not explosive. Also, I loved Brandon Cooks coming out of that
not
draft.
Not explosive.
And Brandon Cooks is explosive. He had 10 grabs, 124, and a touchdown as well. All right, on today's show, we're going to hear from Mike Pettine from his teleconference yesterday. We're going to hear, of course, from Josh Gordon, courtesy of Pro Athlete TV, talking about what he's doing right now, the timetable for him in the offseason, and if he's going to be in the league a year from now helping this team. And I think he's a guy who, if you follow him closely, and I certainly do because I'm a huge Flash Gordon fan, seems really to have matured and seems to get it. And I hope so for his sake. As we saw yesterday, you can go one of two ways. You can kind of get things back in order, get your life back in order, as we've seen in the past guys like Chris Carter do. Or you can go the Justin Blackmon route, which is unfortunately the disease takes control of you. You never get back in order, and he was just arrested for a DUI earlier this week. So hopefully for Josh Gordon, he has kind of turned that corner and will have an opportunity to play the game that he wants to play, and hopefully, you know, it will be for the Browns.
Because he is an exciting player. Ugh. He's a player you have to game plan for if you're an opposing defensive coordinator. And, you know, the Browns offense just doesn't have – they don't have a lot of playmakers right now, Nathan. And Gordon would come in and – you know, assuming he can shake off the rust, you know, that would be a guy that could come in and maybe make an impact again, along with hopefully other receivers and other playmakers that would be brought in, you know, to help supplement what they have here. But boy, this offense looks mighty good if Josh Gordon's around.
Well, all of a sudden, Josh Gordon would be your number one. It pushes Travis Benjamin down to your number two or number three if you go out and draft. I mean, I would love to see the Browns. If Johnny has two more good games and you feel comfortable and you don't love a guy. Now, if the Browns love Goff or they love Lynch, I think you have to take him because we know how important the position is. But let's say you don't love one of those guys. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of a move back. You take a Laquon Treadwell and all of a sudden you come out next year and you've got Barnage at tight end. You've got Gordon. You've got Laquon Treadwell, another big 6'3 wide receiver. You've got Benjamin as your third. And all of a sudden, you've got speed. Yeah. You've got size. You've got explosive. You've got everything you need for Johnny Manziel to hopefully be effective in the NFL.
Hopefully. You know, the only caveat with all of that, with that plan, there are a couple things. But
there are many.
Yeah. Get Travis Benjamin re-signed before free agency starts. Don't let him go out and test the market, because if that happens, you're likely not going to get him back. You've got to, you know, I know talking and you guys spoke to him at Discount.
Yeah, he said it was getting closer every week.
So seal the deal, so to speak, get that done. And like with Barnage, you don't have to worry about the future of free agency. You know, you've got him locked in and you can kind of pencil him in as a wide receiver that can start and play.
Yeah, and in the event that something did happen there, I think finding a slot receiver to thrive with Josh Gordon and Laquon Treadwell would not be the most difficult thing in the world here. I think you could hopefully do that. But, yeah, I think it's an opportunity to be exciting. Josh Gordon obviously is a key part of all of that. He changes the game for this team and gives you the playmakers that, you know, when you looked at the game against Seattle, and you can get away when you've got a really good quarterback. Great quarterback can make average playmakers better. Russell Wilson, I think, is doing that right now with Doug Baldwin. And also when you're playing against – you know, subpar defenses, which quite frankly ours is right now. When you go against elite defenses, you need guys that are able to make plays. Like Odell Beckham, despite his on-the-field antics, and it's going to cost him a game. We'll find out if the appeal holds up. But he was able to make plays against Josh Norman, something that nobody else has been able to do. And when you have a guy that teams have to game plan for, I think that's what really opens everything else up.
Yeah, somebody that keeps the coordinator up all night and thinking about it and the game plan for, and you know, the Browns just don't have that in it. You're asking a lot of Johnny Manziel to go out and do it with the lack of playmakers. So it's something to bear in mind. Beckham, we're going to talk about that. We're going to go around the league later on in the show. I'm interested to get your take on the whole Beckham situation.
So I've seen
unreal.
The highlights. He's done this in a lot of games. He's thrown punches in a lot of games at people. I thought when he went for the helmet to helmet that maybe they would just toss him right there and then kind of get on with it with a fine. It's suspending him for a game. I think it sends a strong message, and I think they will uphold it. I would be surprised if they go back on it. But he's got to He's got to get himself under control. That's the thing. It's been, I was trying to remember what other game it was. He was pushing somebody around. Whenever he gets somebody, roughs around with them, and that's what he does. And he needs to relax and just be a professional and play football and not let it get the best of him.
What if the other team is threatening with bats?
Yeah, but they weren't. So then say, hit me with a bat. Go ahead. Are you really going to hit me with a bat on a football field?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good luck.
Yeah, they're all going to get suspended. Come on, that's not going to happen, number one. They've been bringing that bat out supposedly every game this year.
That's what I've heard.
So, and I know the Saints did it back in, I think, 2009. People were saying the Saints did that every year. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with the bat. I mean, because what are you – you're going to beat somebody on the field with a bat? I mean, really?
I used to be the play-by-play announcer for Oberlin College. They used to have a spear that they would bring out at the 50-yard line when the captains would do the toss. Now, the pregame coin toss. Now, they're not going to spear anybody with it, but they just had it. It was a symbol, and they tucked it away on the sidelines once the game started so nobody could get hurt.
Right. Put it away.
Put it away.
But, I mean, seriously, by the way, and I know they said, oh, well, they called him homophobic slurs. I do not condone that, but that does not surprise. I hear plenty of stuff on the sideline.
I'm sure you do.
Every week. These guys talk a lot of trash to each other, and none of it is nice. And some of it gets into, you know, homophobic stuff. Some of it gets into racial stuff. Some of it gets into, you know, moms. I just think that's just what is going on.
Yeah.
I mean, they can clean that stuff up the best that they can, and I guess there could be magic, you know, penalty words or whatever, but let's be honest about it. It is a little bit of a gladiator type of a sport out there. These guys are putting a lot on the line. But Odell Beckham, I've seen this for weeks now where he will lose his temper if he gets frustrated, and he's thrown punches, and amazingly has not gotten in trouble for it yet. And now I think, whoa, as my chair just goes down like I'm going down the elevator. I think it's just been going on for a long time. And now we're back.
And it seems like the officials let it go.
They let it go, they're not going to let it go. And I think that if he misses a game, he's got no one to blame but himself. You can't do that. And he tried to hurt Josh Norman.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah, and I think that's where he
tried to torpedo him.
Yeah, right. In college, there's no question he'd been thrown out.
Right, right.
No question. So I think that that's something they need to go ahead and figure out and get done. I think that's something they need to figure out, take care of that. Because you don't want that. Again, I think the game should be focused more on celebrations. I'm fine with crazy celebrations. Try to eliminate the nonsensical violence in a game that is already incredibly, incredibly violent. Andrew Gribble. I'm calling him Sir Andrew. I don't know why I've decided that he's a knight now. Sir Andrew Gribble will join us at 2 o'clock. I feel like if he was British a little bit, I think it would really go a long way for Gribbs. I think he could have some.
Raise his rep a little
bit.
Yeah,
could raise his rep. And then 2:45, of course, we'll go around the league. Charles Woodson announcing that he will retire at the end of the season yesterday. In my opinion, one of the greatest defensive backs to ever play the game. And the kid's favorite Michigan athlete of all time, as a matter of fact.
You know what? I'm not a Michigan fan whatsoever, but he might be my all-time favorite Michigan player, you know, from Fremont Ross High School. Just such a – it's 18 years, dependable, consistent playmaker, terrific, terrific player. And he's somebody that will be heading to Canton at some point.
Heading to Canton without a first ballot, automatic. He should get his own wing. I love Chucky Wood. Think about what he's done and how long he's done it. It is remarkable. Remarkable.
18 years. I was still in college when he was.
I was in college.
Yeah.
For sure. Of course. Very, very good stuff. All right. Let's get on the phones. 216-578-0850. Talk about your thoughts on what Joe Thomas had to say yesterday. Not being the strongest lineman in the league, but winning with technique. Something that could apply, of course, to Cam Irving. About him being sold on Manziel early in the season. We saw a different work ethic. That was good. Saying the offense is just now starting to figure things out. That's why they're running the ball better. And also, you know, and the other one is he said he doesn't want to blow things up. And Johnny Manziel saying yesterday he wants to keep everybody here. I see it when I sit here and I look at it and I could say, I think you certainly can make the case on the offensive side of the ball to keep those coaches in place. I think it is very difficult to make the case why you keep the defensive side intact.
Nobody wants to see, you know, when you are practicing and playing and you're in the trenches with this coaching staff, nobody wants to see, you know, play. Nobody wants to see anybody get fired.
Of course not.
You know, I mean, everybody's, you know, you're a team here. Everybody wants to stick around. Having said that, yeah, it's a very difficult case when you have to, you know, the first day after the end of the regular season, you have to sit down in front of your owner, Jimmy Haslam, and make the case as to why this defense should get another chance, why these assistants should get another chance, why the head coach should get another chance, because this is a defense that, you know, there were so many expectations for this year to be among the better and one of the better in the league, and it's just not even come close to that.
The only team in the NFL that is giving up more points per game this year than the Cleveland Browns is the New Orleans Saints. The Browns are giving up 27.6 points per game this year. That is, the Saints are the only team that is worse. In terms of yards per play, the only team worse than the Cleveland Browns this year, the New Orleans Saints. So if you look just at that, yards per play, which is just the absolute efficiency metric for defenses, the Browns giving up 6.1 yards per play. Denver, number one in the NFL, 4.4. Carolina, 4.8. Those are the top two in the league. Most teams are pretty much in the range between, you know, around five and a half is right. Kind of the middle of the league. The Browns at 6.1, New Orleans at 6.6, but nobody is giving up. The only team giving up more points, more yards per play, more points per game than the Browns are the Saints, and Rob Ryan's already been fired.
Right.
They still look terrible.
Yes.
It's just one of those things where, you know, you say to yourself, okay, you know, what can we do here? How can we improve this? What do we have to do on this side of the ball? And that's a question. And for a team that was supposed to, and I know Joe Hayden has missed a lot of time, but Joe Hayden wasn't playing like Joe Hayden before Joe Hayden was hurt. And you look at the passing stats in the league right now. The thing that's amazing is in terms of yards per game, the Browns aren't near the top. They're kind of in the middle, 252.9. But they've given up 29 touchdowns and have only 8 interceptions. 29 passing touchdowns, only 8 interceptions. And so for this team, that wasn't supposed to be the case. That's the fifth most touchdowns in the league. The only teams that are worse in terms of their touchdown-interception ratio, Baltimore's given up 28 touchdowns, 4 picks. Saints, 39 and 6. And I think that's it.
Wow.
I think that's it.
you know, gets me every time, you know, watching the Browns this year, and it started to me for me in preseason, was that the Browns can't get off the field on third down. They can't, you know, on third down, you want to, you know, it's third and five, get off the field. You want to get pressure on the quarterback, make him throw it away, or, you know, force some kind of an explosive play, something like that. And, you know, Seattle just basically grinded things out. And the Browns never had a chance to do anything because the Seahawks just controlled the line of scrimmage and the action on the field, and the Browns could never make a play to get off the field on a third down.
9 of 12, the Seattle Seahawks were in that game, and it's true, it was not enough. They had no opportunity to get off field, get any kind of sustained success on offense, and that's why Seattle ended up controlling the ball for the majority of that game, and it seemed like they could do what they want. If we wanted to line up and go power, we're going to go ahead and do it. If we're going to line up and spread you out and throw the football, that's what they were going to do. So a lot to work on here for the Browns. We want to hear from you, 216-578-0850. Call us up, 216-578-0850. You can tweet the show at Browns_daily. Nathan Zegura and Dino in for Matt Wilhelm today here, of course, on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, tune into the Cleveland Browns Mike Pettine Show tonight. Special night, given the holiday weekend, 7 o'clock right here on ESPN 850, hosted by myself and Ken Carmen. Nathan Zegura with Dave DiNatale in for Matt Wilhelm here today. And let's go to the phone lines, Dino. Light them up.
All right. We've got Mike in Youngstown. Mike, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Welcome to be here with you guys. Dino, it's always good to hear you mixing it up with the host because you do such a great job.
I appreciate
it. He does.
I appreciate that.
We definitely. MVP. MVP. Couple things. I never thought I would say this, and I really think that if Johnny could play two good games in a row, and I'm not saying we necessarily have to win, but just keep showing improvement the way he is improving, the way he's staying in the pocket. You know, I don't think we have to go out there, and I know you guys haven't done your work on, you know, the quarterbacks in the draft, but if we got the first, second, and third pick, there's, in my opinion, there's none of them that are the first, second, or third pick. We need to shore up one of our biggest problems is our linebackers. I don't know if you agree with it or not, but when you've got Shelton just being double-teamed every play and people don't understand that, you know, he's occupying two people and we don't have anybody really filling behind him. And I believe one of the biggest reasons that we, you know, we're giving up so many points. You know, we got young people in there. We don't at the safety corners and whatever. It's because our defensive line, we're not putting the pressure. When you give a pro receiver 4 or 5 seconds to throw the football, no good's going to happen. And the most calling, in my opinion, is a pass rusher and go get us a good linebacker and keep Johnny.
Appreciate the call. I think that Johnny is at least making the case that he can play on the field. At least it's something that you can develop and work with. Off the field, though, that is another issue, and that's the reason why I think they will be faced with that quarterback issue when it comes to it at the beginning of next season. Now, as for the pass rush, the Browns 16 sacks in 2 games, the wins over Tennessee and, of course, San Francisco, 12 sacks in the other 12 games, which is just, quite frankly, not good enough.
No.
And I think that the pass rush has been an issue. There hasn't been any consistent. I mean, Dez Bryant has played well. Armani Bryant at times has played well. But other than that, there hasn't been anybody consistently getting to the quarterback.
Let me ask you a question. This morning I did Hey Tony with Tony Grossi, and he made the case that no matter who is calling the shots as defensive coordinator going forward, the Browns should go to a 4-3 defense. And the feeling is that, you know, take advantage of your strengths on the defensive line.
I like a 4-3 defense. I just think that you look at the teams that are the most successful at playing defense in the National Football League, at least this year, most of them are 4-3s. Mm-hmm. Now, the Patriots kind of play a hybrid.
Yes.
Denver, you can make the case that it can be a hybrid at times, but it also is a lot of 3-4. I just like it for what the Browns have, because I think if all of a sudden you look at Ataba Rubin, was terrible as a 3-4 nose last year.
Yes.
I know he's banged up, but has done very well as a 4-3 defensive tackle. And if you have good pass rushers as your 4-3 ends, now the Browns would have had one in Jabal Sheard,
yes,
who they let go, who would have been a perfect 4-3 end. I think Armani Bryant could be a good 4-3 end for you. I just think it gives you more flexibility, because the teams that have done a good job, Cincinnati's a perfect example, their front four can generate pressure. When your front four can generate pressure by itself, it frees you up to do everything else that you want. You have a little bit more flexibility. You can go into your nickel package and keep the same four down linemen and just go to two backers. I like it just philosophically. I like it. I don't know if you know that's right. I just think that you need to get away from the Rex Ryan defense.
Yeah.
I fully believe the Rex Ryan defense does not work in today's NFL.
How about Travi in Port Clinton? Travi, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Travi.
This is a show all the time.
Thank you.
But, you know, I'm a Browns fan, so obviously I love the draft. So I'm a little confused with this Laquon Treadwell talk, though. I mean,
why is that?
Well, you know, we passed on, or we traded out of Julio Jones. We traded out of Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans. We passed on Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks, Kelvin Benjamin, and I just don't
Allen Robinson.
Allen Robinson. I just don't
could've
see
been had in the late second.
Oh, I know.
I just don't see Laquon Treadwell in the same class. And I think this team, everybody in Cleveland knows we need a wide receiver. That much is obvious. But just because we need it doesn't mean we have to take it in the first round. I mean, you were comparing Treadwell to Julio Jones. I think he's more like a Michael Floyd. He kind of fits that size speed combo a little more, which Floyd obviously would be the best player on the Browns. But I don't know. We have the first or second pick in this draft.
Well, we could.
I
if you want him and you don't think he's a if you don't think he's a first or second pick, and that's the guy that
Thanks
you
for
want,
call, Travi.
You all, I definitely think you can move back, pick up another asset, and still get that receiver that you want.
And you know, there are gonna be fans who are gonna say, "Oh my God, we can't trade back. We've tried that before, and it hasn't worked."
You know, you just have to do it and execute. It's still the
exactly.
right thing to do.
Yeah,
you just have to execute on it. That's the problem.
Yeah, if you're able to get. You know, move back from two, let's say, to six or seven, because there's somebody who is absolutely sold on Paxton Lynch, let's say, to as their quarterback of the future, then, you know, you got to get that King's ransom. You may not get what the St. Louis Rams got for RG3, but get the assets that can help build a team, and you can execute on some needs, like wide receiver, defense, et cetera, et cetera.
For example, in Todd McShay's latest draft, he has the Browns taking Paxton Lynch at number 2. The Titans take Joey Bosa. And then he's got receivers. He's got Laquon Treadwell going number 10 to the Rams. So the Rams are a team that certainly would be looking for a quarterback. I don't know if you know they would make the trade this way to come on up and go ahead and get one, but that's a team that certainly could be considering it. The 49ers could come up. Dallas could come up if they thought they needed to get a quarterback at this point. So I do think you could move back. And if remember, you could have moved back. Mm-hmm. And got Odell Beckham in that trade. So moving back doesn't mean it doesn't necessarily work out. It's just what you do with
yes.
those picks is what matters. So don't let the outcome bias of past failures when you do the right thing be wrong. That would be like saying if you went to, let's just say that you went to a casino
mm-hmm.
and you doubled down against a six and you lost 10 times in a row, even though it was the right thing to do.
Right.
You would just stop doubling down? No, you still double down right. because it's the right, right. thing to do. So.
And the odds are hopefully going to be in your favor that at some point you'll get it right.
Well, you would think.
You would think. You would think. 216-578-0850. Gino is in Akron. Gino, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily.
What's going on, Phyllis? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got 2 points, one on the defensive scheme and then one on the draft. Am I the only person that noticed on a lot of third down and 5 and 6, we're playing about 8-10 yards off the receiver?
We were doing some interesting stuff. On a lot of those, we were rushing 3, dropping
yeah.
8 in these soft zones, and they would just run 3 guys out of a bunch formation at the zone, spread them out, and then somebody would turn around and get an easy first down. It was
unbelievable.
It was confusing to me. I will say that. It was definitely confusing to me at times seeing exactly what the Browns were doing on some of those third downs. It was almost like they had gotten gun-shy from trying to blitz because that wasn't working either. And so they were playing this soft coverage. But as you pointed out, in many cases, I thought it was too soft.
Yeah,
absolutely, especially on 3rd and 5. Other point is, I don't know if I like Brugler and Rang. And it sounds like a lot of people think that Tennessee would go with Tunsil at number one. If I'm sitting there and Joey Bosa's on the board, there's no way I pass on him. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
It would be, once again, another thing where they're going ahead and they're putting their assets into that position. And, again, I'm okay with it. You're going on the defensive line. At some point, you need to get a guy who actually comes in and delivers for you.
Yes.
So if Joey Bosa can come in and be an impact player, then I'm fine with it. Because, frankly, truth is, even though we're talking about the lack of playmakers, in reality, if Josh Gordon comes back, that's like getting a first-round wide receiver just back on your team.
Yes.
Okay. The offense really hasn't been the issue, per se.
Yeah, for the most part, I'll agree with that.
It's been the defense. So if you do want to clean up the defense, Joey Bosa is a guy who certainly could help you do that.
And thus would be another good reason to shift to the 4-3 defense, put him in that natural DN spot, and let him go to work.
Yeah, that's what you want. Go out there and let's go. His best fit, as you talked about, comes as everybody agrees, he is the best 4-3 DN. So if you got Bosa, you would maybe have a situation where you come back next year and you would have, on one end, you'd have Joey Bosa. Mm-hmm. On the other end, maybe you'd have Armani Bryant. In the middle, you'd have Danny Shelton and either John Hughes or a Jamie Meter, and that would be your base group there. Mm-hmm. You could look to add another end maybe in free agency. You could see if you could get Dez Bryant back at a reduced rate, mm-hmm. and he could be your other end. I mean, if you had, you know, Bosa and Bryant as your ends, and then you had Danny Shelton and John Hughes or Meter in the middle, that's not a bad 4-3. You would move Christian Kirksey back to his natural position, which would be, I think, a 4-3 will linebacker,
yes.
which I think is a better fit for him. You would have to get, you know, you're going to have to probably draft or acquire in free agency a good middle linebacker.
Yes.
You know, Craig you'll keep, I'm guessing, but I don't know if you want to turn him over in a 4-3 to be your main guy. So I think that's where you'd look in your defensive backfield. Hopefully it'll be okay.
Can Paul Kruger play the other linebacker in a
4-3? Paul Kruger would probably be – he'd probably be
– Yeah. He's going to have to be
– I would think from this defense, Paul Kruger, Starks – maybe Starks will be back, but he could be a 4-3 tackle. But Paul Kruger – Dansby, Whitner, I would be surprised if those guys are back.
You want to grab one more here before a break?
Yeah, sure. Let's get one more.
Mark is in Chardon. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, Mark.
Yeah, fellas, thanks for the time. I'll try to be quick. The thing that I would like to see happen in this offseason is I do want somebody else picking our draft picks, and I do want another defensive coordinator. But I think Patton has done a pretty good job in a lot of ways in that he drew a strong, hard line with Manziel, and I think you're starting to see a lot of results from that. Reportedly, he spent more time with the offense, and the offense looks much better than it did last year. But he hasn't been spending time with the defense, and that's notably worse. I mean, the things that I think he needs to work on, like his time management, is all stuff that can be learned. And the reason I want that is for consistency. You look at teams like the Bengals or even Belichick, who wasn't very good in his first couple of years. I think we're so fast to cut the cord and we're constantly starting over, where I think he's got a lot to build on and could really improve if we strengthened up those other areas.
Belichick was kind of a victim of circumstance. I don't think Belichick maybe would have gone anywhere had the team not gone.
Yeah.
If
the Browns, because the Browns
the
collapsed.
The point is, my only point was not that he got fired, but it took him a couple of years. You know,
Mark. And I agree, and it does. But Mike Pettine's bread and butter is supposed to be on the defense. He hired somebody who had never been a defensive coordinator before, in Jim O'Neill, who was a very good friend of his, and it is not working. So if Mike Pettine is going to stay, at least the sense that I get from talking to people around the league, that if he were to stay, there would have to be a major overhaul of the defensive side.
He's going to have to I think he'll have to cut that cord.
And he might fall on that sword and say, I'm not going to do that. Because he's going to get paid either way.
Right.
So I understand what you're saying, but in the NFL, when you are right now, you know, you look at where the Browns are, and I believe it's 3-11 right now?
Yes.
3-16 in their last 19 games. The potential to be 3-18 in their last 21. That's a tough situation, and I think it's unfortunate. I happen to like Mike Pettine a lot personally. Mm-hmm. I think that there just are too many things that are not working for this team, because at some point when you keep saying it's the little things and it's this thing and it's that thing and we're not consistent enough, at some point that falls on the coaches, and at some point that falls on coaching and development of players, and that's something that we really haven't seen here. I mean, you look at who's really developed on the Browns in the last 2 years, Barnage.
Yeah.
But he's 30.
Yeah, I mean Barnage.
Benjamin.
Yeah.
Benjamin. Those are the only two guys who have really taken a big step forward.
I can agree with that. I can't.
Defensively, Armani Bryan is playing well.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's a huge step forward. In the secondary, your young guys aren't taking big steps forward like you would like or would have hoped. At linebacker, I think Christian Kirksey's shown good things but hasn't taken that big step that people were expecting. So I think there's something that has to be looked at here. I don't know what the right answer is. I hope that maybe this team can somehow – the switch can go on. You can get it done. He's still, because Mike Penn's answered that question. People are saying, well, you're saying you're spending more time with the offense and defense struggling. He said, that's my bread and butter. That's where he is. I fundamentally and fully believe that it is that scheme. I think that scheme no longer confuses people. There's been enough tape on it, and I think people understand that part of it. Number one. Number two, I don't think that the NFL is set up for you to be able to play press man all over the field. I don't think the rules have been changed to try to take that away. I think it's very difficult. I think that scheme has proven, when you look even back the year that Mike Penn was very effective getting to the quarterback in Buffalo, that it was still 23rd, I think, against the run. That scheme has proven that it's not very good against the run. Buffalo's struggling in that department this year as well. I just don't think that – I think the teams that are playing the best defense are the ones that know what they're doing and go out there and do it. The Seattle Seahawks are playing a 4-3. They're playing cover 3, it seems like, the vast majority of the time. We went through yesterday. They're playing the same 11 guys on defense over on two-thirds of their plays. And six of those guys are playing basically 100% of snaps. For the Browns, you had two guys at 100%.
It's a revolving door.
Yeah, you aren't even playing the same 11 guys on a third of your snaps. Mm-hmm. And I think that Cincinnati's the same way. Cincinnati, if you look through there, because I went and looked it up, their top guys are playing every single snap. They have a ton of continuity in terms of the snap counts being played by their defenders because they have that continuity. They're in that base look a lot of the time, and they know what they're doing play in and play out. Of course, there's the nickel variations where you have the guys that come in to play in the nickel situations, et cetera. But when you look at their defense right now, they've got six guys who have played over 700 snaps, and some of that's for injury. When you look at the Browns in that same category, the Browns aren't even anywhere close to that. And I think that is a big part of the problem in terms of just the continuity of it, of what's going on. The Browns have four guys who have played the majority of the snaps: Dansby, Tremont, and Whitner, and Gibson, and that's it. So it's just one of those interesting things, and it's something that I think people are going to evaluate and they're going to talk about and et cetera. But I do think that if Mike Pettine is going to stay, there are going to have to be significant changes on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't know if that is in coaching or if that's in scheme or something, but I think that is going to be a major effect. By the way, Seattle, six guys all over 700 snaps as well. So it's just one of those. There's something to it. I don't know what it is, but there clearly is something to that. All right, when we come back, take more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. It is Nathan Zagura. It is Dino here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. 2016 season tickets are now available, offering flexible payment options, big savings over single-game ticket prices, the same great seat every game, and more. Kind of a good slate, by the way, at home next year. Some good teams. Here's who's coming into town. You've got, obviously, the Steelers, mm-hmm. the Bengals, and the Ravens. You're also going to have the New England Patriots, chance to see Tom Brady and Double B. You're going to have the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have the Jets and the Giants.
So, but wait, both of the Big Apple teams.
Yeah. So
wow.
It's kind of a marquee year, I think, for the home games
I would
for
agree.
The Browns. And
yes.
Then the other team will be the San Diego Superchargers. That's not listed yet, but that's who you end up playing. It's going to be the last place team in the AFC West at home. So you get the Chargers.
And I hope they still are the San Diego, not the Southern California.
And we don't even know what they're going to be.
Yeah. I hope they're still San Diego Superchargers.
Is that what they're saying they're going to turn them into, the Southern California Chargers?
That or the Los Angeles Superchargers.
The SCC. Interesting. But, I mean, the Patriots, Cowboys, Jets, and Giants. That's pretty stout.
Yeah.
That's pretty stout. Plus the
marquee.
Plus the Bengals, the Ravens, and, of course, the most exciting offense in the National Football League. I know people are going to be mad. How can you say that? They are.
They are.
Watch them.
Sorry.
There is no offense that I enjoy watching more in the NFL right now than the Steelers.
I was down in Dayton over the weekend, and I caught the end of Steelers and the Broncos with a Bengal fan who's a friend of mine, and he was saying, man, he goes, I don't want Pittsburgh in the playoffs. He goes, anybody else, even the Patriots, I feel like we have a good shot at. He goes, I do not want the Steelers in the playoffs.
No, they're the most dangerous team. I think when you look at the AFC, it's going to be the Patriots or the Steelers. I think it's really a two-horse race to come out of the AFC. The NFC is a very good, thoroughbred level three-horse race with Arizona, Carolina, and, of course, who's the third team that's a, why is it eluding me right now? Arizona and Seattle.
Seattle, yeah.
You got three, I think, three very good teams there. And it's interesting, as of last week, to just make your point about Steelers, I'm going to pull it up right here and see if it's still true. Actually, they don't have it online right now. When the last time I looked at the Super Bowl odds, the Steelers actually had the second best Super Bowl odds. It was, or worst, depending on how you're looking at it. But the Patriots were the favorite. The Steelers were the second favorite. Then it went Carolina, Seattle, and Arizona were all right there. But that offense is something. That defense, though, is suspect. That defense makes me – that's the one thing that I think makes me a little bit concerned. That defense is suspect.
Whose defense do you trust less, the Patriots or the Steelers?
Steelers. Defense do I trust? I think the Patriots have a good defense.
I don't – I'm not – it's good but not great.
They're first in the league in sacks, the Patriots. First in the league in sacks. Let's see where they're at. They're only giving up 19 points a game. The Steelers are giving up 20. Amazing. That's amazing. The Steelers only giving up 20. Seems like
doesn't feel like it.
Seems like they're in a lot of shootouts. Let's see. Game stats. Let's see where they rank. Steelers give up the ninth most yards, 368.6 per game. The Patriots give up the fifth fewest, 326. 5.1 per play for them, 5.7 for the Steelers. 19.2 versus 20.5. Amazing. They haven't given up that many points. So I think that Patriots, I trust the Patriots D a little bit more. I trust the Steelers offense more, though. I take the Steelers offense over anybody. That's how good they are. All right, speaking of, we would give them an A. Speaking of grades.
Yes.
Speaking of grades, let's give out our grades right now for the offense. We'll start with the quarterback position. Johnny Manziel on the day, 19 of 32, 161 yards, one touchdown, one interception, quarterback rating of 69.9. The interception came in garbage time. Yeah. Five drop passes. If you get those five, he's 24-32, which all of a sudden puts him at 75% against a very good defense in Seattle. Your grade for Johnny Manziel?
I will give him, understanding of the drops, I'll give him C+. Just above average, slightly above average.
I was going to give him a B-. I thought that he had a good poise, good composure in a very hostile environment against a very good defense. The interception was at the end of the game. He was just trying to make a play, throwing it in there to Dwayne Bowe, who was covered. I think he was trying to draw a flag because Dwayne Bowe and that guy were kind of dancing like sixth grade dance style, holding each other, but not too close. And somebody came over and got it. But I thought all in all, played good. That first drive was brilliant. Very good on third down.
Was fantastic.
I do think at some point he needs to find a little bit of balance between – staying in the pocket and still running. I thought there were some opportunities that he had to run, but I'll give him a B- there. Again, a solid performance, not quite good enough, though. You needed some more yards in that game for Johnny Manziel and that offense overall. The running backs, Duke Johnson, 4 carries for 46 yards, a long run of 39. Crow, only 9 carries after 20 last week, 23 yards, and that was it for the running backs there. Out of the backfield, Duke led the team 5 catches and 39 yards. I mean, that's sad that led the team. Crow, 3 catches for 7 yards. They really couldn't get much going, but Duke still on the day for Duke, 85 total yards. You'll take that on 9 touches. That's pretty effective, pretty efficient. A big part of the game plan early, but again, not enough. I would give the running backs a C, not an average performance.
Average performance. I mean, I like Duke. I think he's getting more comfortable. I think maybe some of it maybe goes on flip. I know Seattle scoring points in chunks there in that late first and into the second quarter. Don't give up on the running game too quickly.
Yes, indeed. And then, of course, we'll go to the wide receivers, and I thought this was a bad game for the wide receivers. Benjamin led that group, 3 catches for 26 yards. Bowe, 2 for 22. Moore, 1 for 20. Gabriel, 2 for 18. Pryor, no catches on his 2 targets, and that group accounted for 4 of the 5 drops on the day. Not good enough. I'm going to give the receivers, and I know it's a good secondary there, but I thought the drops, especially the Gabriel one, was critical on a third down. He's had a rough year. I'm going to give them a D minus in this one.
D minus. I won't give them a failing grade, but it's not good. They can do better.
They can do better. They need to do better. And then the tight end, Gary Barnage, limited to just 3 catches for 29 yards, did catch a touchdown for the second straight game, 3 straight in starts by Johnny Manziel. Blocking-wise, Jim Drake continues to struggle mightily as a blocker, and that's all he's here to do, so I don't like that at all. E.J. Bibbs only 4 snaps, not much of a factor. Barnage played 49 of the 55. He was solid. Again, I'll give that for this group. I'll give it a B minus because Barnage did get in the end zone.
Yeah, and he also set the record. So we'll tip the cap.
We'll tip the cap to him.
Yeah.
All right. My Mo Pedman.
Mo is in the house.
Mo in the house, looking good in a nice sweater.
Oh, I know.
If that was red, he'd be ready for Christmas.
I'm kind of disappointed it's not an ugly Christmas sweater, but that's okay.
If it was red and he had a beard, we'd think Santa Claus was here. Oh, Mo Pedman says back to the regular scheduled program.
Mo Pedman says I have no further comment.
All right, let's go to the offensive line now. On the day, 3 sacks allowed, 11 quarterback hurries. The Seahawks hit Johnny Manziel on the day. They only hit him another 6 times. So the 3 sacks, 6 hits, 11 hurries. All in all, you know, not a lot of push in the running game other than the 1 big run by Duke Johnson, but this is a very good defense. I would give them probably a C plus. Thought it was an average performance from the offensive line.
I'll go a little bit lower there, but it's just a C. Nothing special.
Nothing special.
Nothing special.
And it wasn't enough offensively.
No.
Anytime you go out there and you look at the game for the Cleveland Browns, when you go out against the defense and you only put 13 points on the board, that's one thing. That's not very good. And then when you're only able to go out there and generate 230 yards of offense, you only possess the ball for 25 minutes versus basically 35 for your opponent. That's not enough. 15 first downs, 28 first downs for the Seattle Seahawks. The Browns averaging 4.4 yards a play. Seattle right at the Browns' average for the season at 6.2. It just wasn't enough offensively for this team to get in the game and be able to do it. Now, part of it was they weren't put in a lot of good situations, but after that first drive, which was a very good one, 100 yards the rest of the game, not enough.
No, not nearly enough.
Didn't get it done. All right, that'll do it for the grades. 216-578-0850. You can call us up when we come back from the podium. Mike Pettine's teleconference highlights. 2 o'clock, Andrew Gribble. 215, Flash Gordon. Some nice words from the young man who seems to be getting things going in the right direction. We hope he can maintain that for his sake and, of course, for ours, because it would be nice, selfishly, if he's able to come back and play for the Browns like he did the year that he was the leading receiver in the National Football League just 2 years ago. In 2013. Segura and Dino, CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Some news out of Berea. The Browns have re-signed wide receiver Darius Jennings to the active roster and placed John Greco on injured reserve. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there, because that will leave them right now, based on last week's roster, 6 linemen that are on the 53.
Wow. So you've got...
Well, that would be 7. They also have Caleb, who was on the who was inactive last week. So it'd be 7 on the 53. I wonder if how they're going to use the actives and inactives. This could mean Dwayne Bowe goes back to being inactive, which would be sad.
He may be a healthy scratch.
I thought the panache with which he had on those 2 catches was fantastic.
Well, the Seahawks
defenders, the respect they showed him.
Was plenty of respect there.
It was interesting. We talked about it with Jim Donovan yesterday on the show. I brought it up too. They basically stopped and all went over and hugged him and gave him respect, which I thought was mind-boggling.
And you can't
me.
Deny a homecoming for Bo in Kansas City, can you?
No. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
If Mo Pedman says yes, it can happen.
Could you imagine? So far this year, he has always had, when you've played a team that you've played for or the city that you're from, that's who Pet's always had the captains be.
Oh.
So Dwayne Bowe, if active, would have to be a captain.
Under those settings, yes.
Of course, in yes. Kansas City. Do you think he can make him inactive and a captain?
I don't know. Wow.
Maybe we'll find out. Maybe Mo Pedman will ask that question on the coach's show later.
Get on that for us, if you wouldn't mind.
The slamming Swede, the Duncan Dutchman, will talk to his cousin, Ken Carman. And see if he can get that question asked.
Just work on that for us.
Yeah, so that's the news there. That's it. And now we're going to play a couple cuts from Mike Pettine's presser yesterday. And the first one was talking about, again, Well, he keeps talking about how the level of the team's play is not quite good enough, and you know, and he's saying that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, without we're evaluating why. He hasn't really come out with an explanation of the why that has been yet, but for the most part, struggling with why this team's play hasn't been good enough, and too often that's been the case. When you're 3-11, obviously that will be the case too often. When he was asked why that's been the case a lot this year, are we ready with that yet or no? All right. Why that has been the case so much this year? Our level of play wasn't good enough. That's been the case a lot this year.
You know, our level of play just wasn't good enough. Needed to give ourselves an opportunity to win the game, and we just weren't consistent enough. You know, and unfortunately, that's been the theme in a lot of our losses this year.
Yeah, that buzzword, consistency. Well, you don't have a lot of consistency, unfortunately, when you're 3-11. Coach expanded on that idea of lack of consistency.
It's consistency. Every game we can make a, you know, and yesterday's no different. I can make a cut-up tape of us executing plays at a high level, and then we have some plays that unfortunately end up, you know, on the blooper reel.
And I get that, but I feel like we've been hearing that week after week after week after week after week. Who is ultimately responsible for that? Is it the players? Is it the coaches? Who was responsible? What I want to know.
I mean, I think it has to, does it not have to start with the coaches?
You would think so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not absolving anybody on the 53-man for lack of success this year. I'm not absolving anybody. But, you know, for what Coach was just talking about in that clip, you know, that's on him and that's on his staff. He knows that. Mike Pettine's a smart guy. He knows that.
Yeah, and they've got to figure out and I just want to hear something different, too. I'd like to hear a different, you know, other than we just weren't consistent, et cetera.
Right.
So Johnny Manziel, great first drive after that, only 100 yards passing. But Mike Pettine thought he played well, and he was asked, how can you say that, given the facts?
The things that he could control. We thought he was solid with. Could he have done some better things? Absolutely. But I'm not going to sit here and put that, you know, just 100 yards after the first drive. I'm not going to hang that on him.
Well, I get that, but you know, the offense needed to keep moving. I mean, you know, when they did get their opportunities, they needed to build on that drive.
Yes, they did, but again, sometimes the passes were dropped.
Yeah.
You know, the Taylor Gabriel, you don't know if that drive could have ended up being something or amounting to something. It's a quarterback needs to elevate everybody else's play, but he can only do so much, and we've seen that, I think, a lot this year. I would have liked to have seen more production out of him. That's why our grade for Johnny Manziel wasn't glowing.
No.
It was, you know, around average, a little bit better than average. But he needs to find a way to do more because the supporting cast isn't changing anytime soon. And I think people are starting to get a sense that Terrell Pryor as a wide receiver is maybe not the best thing. I hope for Johnny's sake, honestly, in Kansas City, he gets more Dwayne Bowe. Because Dwayne Bowe is at least an NFL wide receiver who's competent and may not get open, but knows how to make plays, knows where to go, and has good hands. So hopefully he gets the benefit of that.
Last thought about TPZ before we hit a break. Assuming, okay, he plays the last two games and we see whatever production, would you like to see him go through an offseason with the Browns, go through all the offseason conditioning and the OTAs and minicamp as a receiver and then see how he develops going into next year at training camp?
Yeah, and see if there's anything there. I think he's still learning the nuances of the position in a full offseason.
Because I would. I want to see more.
Yeah, he didn't do that last year. He was still trying to be a quarterback in Kansas City in Cincinnati before they released him. So, yes, I would like to see him with that because of his athletic ability and the size and speed. I just think that people find it's just not always that easy to make that kind of a transition. And you could see, even though he got open on that one slant, which he dropped badly, he's got to catch that ball. He still struggled. If you go back and watch tape, when they wanted to keep him at the line of scrimmage, he had a tough time getting his releases exactly how he probably would have wanted them to be. All right, when we come back, Andrew Gribble, Browns senior staff writer, ClintonBrowns.com, and the Browns mobile app will be with us live in the Dog Bowl on CBD here on ESPN 850 WKNR.